Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to your July 27th Committee on Rules. We're hoping it's one of the last few of the committee meetings. We're hoping.
No.
I know. Ms. Harris does not want to go back to her real life. Could I bring up, let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2157 and bring up Representative Cameron and Representative Berger so we can get them out of there so they can get to their golf games.
Oh, yeah.
Just teasing. I know you're working very hard in the House. Good afternoon.
For the record, State Representative Vicki Berger, District 20. I am here as chair of the House General Government Committee that first heard this bill. It is big, it is ugly, it is complex, and it begins to address an issue that is before us, and that is the safety and security of the public when it comes to who works in state government, what their background or what their ability to do harmful things and how we protect the public in our hiring, basically, of those folks. It used to be a simple matter. We'd do a background check on people. Did they have a criminal history? Yes, no, and away we go. Now we have the capability and the obligation to look deeper and, in fact, clear back to the FBI, which is the source of a lot of this information. And I think the Dr. Patel incident sort of reminded us that if we don't check, there is the potential for real harm. But there's also the whole issue around what are we checking for, by what method are protections, civil liberties protected within this process, and that's what this bill begins to try and tackle. As such, it's full of a lot of difficult sort of policy decisions along the way. It is an attempt at sort of an omnibus sense of who would we, agency by agency, who would we be doing background checks on and for what reason and how would we do it in a process. I think it's very important that this bill get out of this legislature because to wait two more years is to invite it getting more difficult, not easier. And with that, I am going to turn this over to Representative Cameron, who, when he walked in as a freshman, I assigned him this as a little work committee.
Oh, you're so thoughtful.
I was so thoughtful. This is just the tip of the iceberg of the work he's put into this. So he is my real expert.
Okay, thank you. Representative Cameron.
Good afternoon, Chair Brown, members of the committee. For the record, Representative Kevin Cameron, District 19 here in Salem, Marion County. And if I can give up my golf game to sit in front of Chair Krieger, I can certainly do it today because this is a real important committee and a real important bill, and I didn't get a chance to shoot a 96 yesterday like my colleague. Anyways,
ooh,
here we go.
I assume that's good.
That's, she had a great game, yeah, from what I understand.
That's okay. All right.
But it was 97 degrees.
Yeah. The bill you have before you, the Steen Gross version of 2157, is a long, challenging process that is not over, will continue. I'd like to go on the record that we did ask on the record on the House side that an interim work group be put together to address this issue for the state of Oregon on a continual basis, as it is an important area to try to balance both the public safety issue that this bill addresses as well as the protection of individual rights that this bill tries to address. A little bit of history. When I did come here, basically I was sitting on a committee and there was three or four different bills and two different committees that I was on, and I said, whoa, we're addressing this fingerprinting thing from all different directions. And realizing that, put together this work group to try to bring it under one particular bill. Section 2 of this bill is extremely important in addressing the concerns that we're just kind of floating out there. Section 2 basically is the process that any state agency that gets authorization to ask for fingerprints, Section 2 outlines a process that they must go through to be eligible for that authority. Section 2, one of the things it does that was in particularly important, fingerprints were floating all over the place. Section 2 makes the state police the stopgap for the fingerprints. They will be the ones to take fingerprints and destroy them when they are returned. They won't go back to agencies as some were getting them, etc. The process to get here today, we probably had... And Andrea will refresh my memory, probably had at least six, maybe eight work groups with as many as 40 people in the room in each one of those work groups. Different agencies that were here, as well as the ACLU to get us to this particular point. With that, I will just answer any questions that you might have about the bill.
Thank you very much. We appreciate both of yours very hard work on this issue. Any questions for these two committee members? Apparently not. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Neely, Ms. Whitfield, and Mr. Harwish. Again, we've heard the component pieces of this measure, so that I ask that you keep your remarks brief. Thank you. Hi. Yes, you wish. Go ahead, Mr. Neely.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Kevin Neely, Department of Justice, representing Attorney General Hardy Myers. And I apologize, I was out of the room for the testimony just a second ago, but I will be extremely brief. Bill, 2157, as I'm sure was explained to you, has gone through a lot of work. The Attorney General believes that this is an important bill to help ensure public safety. We think that we have done our level best to address the concerns of the many parties, or at least two parties, that have had concerns, and we would appreciate passage of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Whitfield.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Patricia Whitfield, Oregon State Police Identification Services Section. Oregon State Police was the original sponsor of this bill, and specifically Section 2 absolutely addresses the piece that we wanted to accomplish, and that is providing a streamlined and consolidated process for non-criminal justice background checks. Previously, over the years, and currently, we get calls from agencies that don't have the authority, wishing to seek that authority, and we advise them that they must go through the legislative process or the governor's office to gain access. And in some cases, they've gone through the legislative process and not necessarily had the terms that meet FBI qualifications to allow them that access. So this Section 2 specifically of this bill does address that successfully. Yes, there has been a ton of work, a lot of input, and we do support all of the adopted amendments to this point. FBI has also reviewed the and gross version and does approve that as well. So we think that sets us very well in place to make this happen for the agencies seeking the authority. Without adding anything else, I'm more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Appreciate your written testimony.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, I'm Randy Harnish with the Department of Education, and I will be equally brief. We're interested in this bill for a number of reasons. One rather mundane reason is that our fee structure is set in statute, limiting us to $42 per applicant. We currently have to pay $52 plus $6 of our own expense. To obtain that information, this bill removes that $42 cap and allows us to set the fees by administrative rule. Without this bill, we will be paying out approximately $16,000 per month out of our general fund over the biennium, equaling about $385,000. So, with
thank
that,
you.
We're very happy.
Mr. Harnish, questions? All right, you're off the hook. Ms. Meyer, why don't you come on up? And just for the folks in the audience here, 2157, there are conflicts amendments. Legislative Council informs us they will not be ready until Friday. We're hoping to move that up by 24 hours, so we'll see what we can do. But at this point in time, we can't move the bill. Ms. Meyer.
questions.
No, I won't take it personally. I get to sit by myself, and everyone else goes together. Chair Burdick, members of the, Chair Brown, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, legislative director for the ACLU of Oregon. As has been discussed, we have been involved in this bill quite a bit during the session of many hours. I want to go over quickly some of the background and then some of the concerns that the ACLU has. We have continually, before the legislature, expressed concerns about the requirements of FBI fingerprint nationwide criminal background checks as a condition for public employment, contracting, voluntary, interstate licensing, which are the issues before you today. Requiring FBI fingerprint checks assumes that an individual is guilty and must prove his or her innocence. And in addition, it provides fingerprints to the FBI of innocent people, which raise concerns about how the prints may be used if they are retained by the FBI. Because of these concerns, the ACLU has insisted since 1991 that Oregon laws requiring nationwide fingerprint checks include safeguards, ensuring that prints be returned and destroyed by state agencies, and that the FBI not retain any facsimile or electronic copies of the fingerprints of individuals who have no criminal record. Historically, though, the FBI has investigated and kept files on the lawful political activities of innocent people. We recently, in the last few weeks, learned that the FBI has amassed more than 1,100 pages of records on the ACLU since 9/11/2001. Unfortunately, in recent years, fingerprints are increasingly transmitted through computer scanning, which makes them subject to unintended release or hacking, as well as making it easier for the FBI to retain copies without the knowledge of state officials. So despite laws and policies in place, we remain skeptical as to the actual practices of the FBI. Because one of the purposes of the criminal justice system is to encourage reformation of criminals, especially those who commit offenses when they are young, we are concerned that the increasing use of criminal background checks will be used to discriminate against individuals who have truly reformed. The ACLU, therefore, has also insisted in the past that there should be a nexus required between specific jobs and occupations and the type of criminal offenses that might act as a bar to employment or licensing. Because of the sensitive nature and frequent errors contained in the criminal history files, indeed, I think Department of Human Services has a 50% rate of correcting records when people are able to appeal a denial, we have insisted on due process protections that allows the subjects of required criminal background checks to challenge the accuracy of the resulting reports. And finally, we've insisted on safeguards to prevent the broad dissemination of individual criminal histories in order to prevent discrimination. I want to touch on briefly the basics of 2157C engrossed. It has two primary components. Section 2 sets forth a uniform process, procedure, and safeguards for all agencies and departments to follow when subjecting an individual to an FBI fingerprint check. While there is some improvement in this section over current law, it primarily serves the purposes of placing the procedures in one place. One clear improvement has been to require the disposal of fingerprints if taken only for statewide records checks. Previously, the law was silent on this, although now with this law and increasing use of FBI fingerprint checks, we think limited background checks will be limited in their use. The increased numbers. This is one of our primary concerns. The second impact of 2157C engrossed is to greatly increase the numbers of individuals potentially subjected to a FBI fingerprint check by thousands. Sections 3 through 78, the rest of the bill, list all the eligible agencies and departments, some of which currently have authority, but many of which previously did not. While there have been efforts to limit which persons would be subject to the background check by various limiting languages in each enabling section, we remain concerned that the limiting language may be so broad that it will have little to no effect in restricting the numbers of persons who would be subjected to an FBI fingerprint background check. We have asked for a better understanding about the numbers of persons who could be subjected to the requirements of this proposal. We have been told that the agencies and departments can simply not provide this number. The only number circulated, if you hear a number of who they project will have the impact, is a preliminary number that was obtained through an informal process a number of weeks ago asking agencies to give an estimate on who they intended right away to fingerprint. But that's not what we're asking for. We would like to know how many employees, contractors, volunteers, and licensees will be swept up in this and could be required to give fingerprints without any further legislative authorization. We believe that a reasonable estimate of the number should be possible to obtain. After all, each agency and department that has been asked to be included in the bill, some of them very recently, had to identify the categories to include in this legislation, and as such should be able to give this information either by raw number or percentage. We renew our request to this committee to again and hope this committee will assist and insist on answers so that we can have a better understanding of the implications of this legislation before you move it to the Senate floor. Auditing safeguards, our second concern. In the past, one of the primary safeguards put in place by the Oregon State Police in return for authorizing agencies and departments to use the LEDS terminals for statewide background checks was to audit the use of these terminals to prevent abuse by employees using those secure terminals. Unfortunately, with the reduction of staff resources, Oregon State Police has fewer auditors and is not able to perform this essential safeguard as frequently as necessary. This bill expands the number of agencies and departments which have never exercised this authority before without truly providing, we believe, the necessary oversight and safeguard so that the procedures you have set forth in this law truly are followed and implemented. Third, the Oregon University System. We oppose the Section 71 as currently written because it sweeps in too broadly faculty and staff and others, and I'll just cut it short to say the -C-22 amendments address our concerns and remove those folks, so we would urge you to move forward with those amendments. Finally,
Ms. Meyer, are those your amendments?
No, they are Neely's amendments, so I believe they are a sweep-all catch-all for a number of concerns that were expressed actually originally over in the House side, but for a matter of time in getting this bill before you, it was agreed to move it forward with the understanding that those amendments would be addressed before this committee. Finally, I would like to get on the record our concern about the continued exclusion of the Oregon State Lottery from this bill. The Oregon State Lottery currently does have the authority to do FBI nationwide criminal checks. However, they are explicitly excluded from this bill, and as such, they do not also, in their enabling statute, have the requirements that the FBI return or destroy the fingerprints. They do not have the nexus or job fitness determination that is required by every other agency and department and everyone else using this important and powerful authority. We see no reason for them to be excluded from the safeguards and protections that you are putting in place for everyone else. And if this is not addressed this session, because this looks like we're going to be continuing to work on it during the interim, the ACLU would renew its request that this be seriously considered and resolved shortly. Before proceeding, we do urge this committee to look at the questions we've raised today and hopefully get some additional answers. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from Ms. Meyer? Thank you very much. Appreciate you joining us.
And this is my file.
Okay. Let's see. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2157 unless anyone else wants to testify. Again, we do not have conflict amendments ready. Hopefully they'll be ready tomorrow. Could you get the rest of our members? Thanks. The chairs, we're not going to move forward on House Bill 3474, so proponents and opponents, go play golf, please. At least not today. You might touch base with my office if you're interested in that issue. Of course, now Mr. Shipley's going to kill me, but... I'd like to move into work session on House Bill 3352. This is a bill sponsored by Representative Butler. We sent it to the floor. It came back. I believe staffer from Representative Butler's office is here if anybody has any questions. I would like to move the bill back to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendations. There are no amendments to House Bill 3352. Any discussion about House Bill
3352? If there's no conflict, why would we do that?
Send it to the floor?
No, why is it back here?
I think it's fair to say that some members had some concerns about the substance of the issue, and we've addressed those
and
concerns.
The concerns are now healed?
That is correct.
They healed themselves without the need of this committee?
That is correct.
Madam Chair, I would move the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation again.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson, 3352. Any discussion?
This ruins my retirement plan, Madam Chair.
Well, at least you have one for this very early. Any other discussion? Motion carries. Senator Ringo, I believe you were carrying this the last time it went to the floor. Are you willing to carry it again, Senator Ringo?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Anybody needing to testify on House Bill 3238? Is Ms. Rockland here or Mr. Davies here from SAFE? All right. I'm waiting to hear from one of them, either in person or via phone, on the Dash 19 amendments. Go down. Yes, Senator Ringo.
I was just trying to slow the train down a little bit. The Dash 19 amendments, we haven't had a hearing on them, have we?
No, that's why I would like the agency to testify, since it's my understanding they're opposed to the amendments.
I see. And who's offered the Dash 19? You know?
Mr. DiLorenzo.
Okay. I just was asking. Thank you.
Yeah. Let's go down to work session. Let's open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2461.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2461B requires applicants for notary public appointments to take a 3-hour notary public education course.
Thank you. Mr. Miles, why don't you come forward and tell us why we need this bill?
Hello, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Phil Miles. I'm the Chief Deputy County Clerk with Marion County, and I'm here representing the Association of County Clerks. Fundamentally, I won't go in. I've submitted written testimony. I won't waste your time repeating everything that's on it. Fundamentally, the clerks in the recording section have problems in recording documents where the notaries have made substantial errors to the document. And these substantial errors prevent us from recording the documents, so we have to reject them, which in turn snowballs it. The transaction that they're dealing with, whether it's a sale or a mortgage or whatever, is put on hold and everybody's inconvenienced. So, and most of the problems are fundamentally the notaries don't understand the notary law. Right now, as I understand it, the notaries have an open book test. There is really no formal training that they're required to take. This bill requires 3 hours of formal training. In the testimony I submitted, I gave you some ideas or some examples of the things that we're faced with, such as recording plats. On plats, a couple of sessions ago, the law was changed so they don't have to use their notary stamps on the Mylar plats because the ink doesn't stick on the plats. So the law was changed to where they can sign their name and put all the information on the plat that's on their stamp on the plats. However, the law is very specific as to what they have to put on, and when you get down to the actual date of the commission, they have to fill out the entire year. They have to fill out the two-digit date and the month. If they don't do that, the statute says we can't record the document. This sounds very particular and very picky, but the statute is written that way, and we're bound to follow it. We've had notaries that submit documents to us where the document actually isn't signed. They just wholesale write these signatures out on blank documents, and then the people that actually sign the documents come along later and sign them. So you get a lot of that sort of thing. You have notaries that take their stamp and stamp it right over the text of the document, then we can't read it. We'll have notaries that acknowledge themselves as the person signing the document. And then when we talk to them, they don't understand that's not what they're supposed to do. So fundamentally, what we're asking for in this bill is some education for these folks. And I might add, it's not just the state of Oregon's notaries that do this. We get notaries from all over the country who are doing the same thing. But one small step is better than no steps. So if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Miles. Questions? Senator Atkinson.
How often do you have to take the training? Just once?
Yes.
Okay. And so the Secretary of State administers it?
The way the bill is written right now, the Secretary of State can administer it, but they can also train employers to conduct the training for their employees.
So, okay, thank you. And so does the Secretary of State going to come to us and need a $100,000 increase in their budget to oversee this new program?
Not to my knowledge. I think they can do it with the existing funds. I can't speak for the Secretary of State, obviously, but...
Is there any private companies out there that are going to do this training?
Not
to my knowledge. They can't do it?
Sarah Atkinson, just so you know, there's no fiscal impact on the bill, which leads me to assume that the Secretary of State's office... Hello.
Hi. Chair Brown, members of the committee, my name is Peter Threlkill. I'm the director of the Corporation Division for the Secretary of State, and I'd be happy to answer any questions
you
may have.
Thank you so very much.
We currently provide training on a voluntary basis for any notaries that want to take the training. We go out all throughout the state throughout the year, and most recently we've had about roughly between 1,500 and 2,000 notaries have come and taken the free three-hour training class that we already put on. We're not asking for any additional funding. We're already doing the job, and by making the mandatory training, we would just look at utilizing larger halls and maybe more frequent visits to the communities throughout the state. We're also looking at building an online or contracting to have an online training course made available so that notaries can just go through the website and complete the three-hour training course and take their tests online. There are a number of vendors that that do come around, whether they're from out of state or and will put on training courses. They would come in and they would charge a tuition or a fee for a notary that wanted to come and go to their training class. And what we would do is certify their training plan and make sure that it met the needs or the requirements of Oregon's laws.
Thanks.
Any further questions? Appreciate you. Sarah Ringo.
It seems to me that any large employer is going to have notaries that know what they're doing. I mean, if you're a real estate agency or a law firm that notarizes a lot of documents, and because of the inaccurate notary, it gets rejected, they're going to fix that internally. And you're shaking your head saying, no, that's not true.
No, that isn't true. I can give you an example from yesterday, in my office, in fact. We received a packet of about 75 satisfaction of mortgage documents, all from one company. We had to reject over half of them because they were photocopies. They weren't original notaries.
Right, but that my point is that I'll bet you that employee doesn't make that mistake very often.
Actually, it happens almost on a daily basis. There are major companies out there that are trying to cut corners in labor and in time, and they do that continually.
It's hard for me to believe that a three-hour initial training course is going to fix it if a business is operating that lack of quality control.
Well, you know, it's a start. You know, that's kind of the bottom line to it. It's a start. I mean, short of sending these people through courses, you know, short of giving them a bachelor's degree in it or a law degree, you know, I don't know what you can do. You know, but it is a major problem out there.
Mr. Miles, I have a law degree, and I stopped being a notary public because the requirements were just like, oh, I can't deal with this. So I'm serious. I couldn't do it anymore.
The 3 hours, that's how long it takes to learn how to go.
That's not all there is to it.
Yeah. Just about.
Senator Farioli.
Just about.
The practical problems that are created, I had just a bit of experience at with the last 48 hours. My in-laws are both in fairly serious medical issues right now. They needed to add a family member as a successor trustee. And the notary public who was asked to witness the signatures made an error, a substantive error on one of the documents. And subsequently, one of the relatives had a stroke and now is unable to make the signature in a legible form. And so that creates a whole series of issues. And so the question of competency, even in something as simple as witnessing the signature, can be a really serious, consequential issue to people. So I would say if we need to do something to increase the awareness of the complexities and make sure that the witnessing of a document is done in an appropriate and legally defensible manner. That is of critical importance to lots of people in Oregon.
Thank you, Senator Farrelly. And Senator Ringo, of all people, should understand that.
My legal assistant doesn't screw up.
Correct a lot of stuff then.
Yes, she does. And if she did what you just described, there would be a malpractice action.
All right. Thank you both very much. We appreciate you joining us, particularly you on short notice.
Did I just hear an ambulance go by?
Any further questions?
Okay. We can be talking later.
All right. Anybody else wishing to testify on House Bill 2461? Close the public hearing. Go to work session. Senator Farrelly.
I move the bill, Madam Chair. Move House Bill 2461B.
Senator Farrelly has moved House Bill 2461B to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection?
Yes.
Senator Atkinson?
Madam Chair.
Senator Ringo?
I would like to vote no, and I guarantee you there will not be a minority report relating to notaries.
Thank you very much. You guys okay on my right? Lost my left. Hang on to my right.
Are you sure?
Senator Atkinson and Ringo will be recorded as no. Motion carries.
What's the relating clause?
Senator Farrelly, would you like to carry
the
bill? Thank you so very much. It's a pretty boring relating clause, you guys.
Not if we create the notary republic.
I'm looking still for Mr. Have you seen Mr. Davey?
I understand that.
There he is.
He's on his way.
Great. Good. I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 3238. We have the dash 18 amendments. Would someone like to come just briefly and walk us through the dash 18 amendments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Pat Allen with the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. The 18s, they're sort of a gut and stuff of its own, of the bill's own contents, if you will, to reorder what's in there. The main thing they do is they take out the language having to do with changes to legislative review of rules, takes out the language having to do with waiver of rules, and leaves what I think are a fairly evolutionary rather than revolutionary set of changes to how advisory committees work, how fiscal impact statements are done, those kinds of things. I do have a quick page or two that kind of gives you a rundown of the six things that the bill does. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, and we have a copy of your summary of the dash 18 amendments. Does anybody like to ask Mr. Allen any questions? Thank you very much.
Well, just one quick point on the dash 19 dash 20 issue. The difference between those that's of importance on the rest of the bill is the 20s take out the emergency clause if you choose to make
Thank
that
you.
Policy choice, and we need time to be able to train agencies on the changes that are in the dash 18s.
So you would like the dash 20s?
I wouldn't go that far, but if you're going to do that set of things, we'd prefer the 20s, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. DiLorenzo, you want to walk us through the dash 19 amendments, please, or someone else, Mr. Miller, someone else want to do those?
Madam Chair, thank you. John DiLorenzo for Oregonians for Sound Economic Policy. With me is Sean Miller with Liberty Northwest, and they're very simple. The dash A20s are probably preferable to the 19s in this setting because they delete the emergency clause. So I'll focus on the 20s, which are identical to the 19s with that exception.
Okay.
The 19s require the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services to adopt rules which require consistent application of workers' compensation rates, rating plans, and rating systems. In other words, rules that are adopted that will apply to all carriers, Safe, Liberty, and whoever else is in the system, must be applied consistently. In other words, there must be objective criteria for individual rating purposes. If certain groups or organizations have provided discounts or breaks, there should be objective basis for that disparity. It's a very fair bill. It will apply to everyone. I think it will make the system even better. The second part of the amendment allows the director, in the director's discretion, to adopt rules that will make filed rates, rating plans, and other supporting documentation public for open inspection if the director believes that that is an advisable policy.
Thank you. Mr. Miller, you wish to add anything?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller, Liberty Northwest Insurance. This bill was Senate Bill 984. It did come out.
That was my first question.
Passed the Senate General Government Committee, Senator Shields' committee, unanimous, the floor 27-1, I believe. There was offensive language in the bill to Safe Corporation. On the House side in particular, and that dealt with the assigned risk pool study and SAFE actually reporting back to that study. We took that language out of the bill and pared it down to what you see before you. Madam Chair, we did our due diligence on this amendment, obviously to get approval from the House members as well as leadership. And I know today we did not get that approval from House leadership, so I'll state that for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. DiLorenzo, did SAFE testify against Senate Bill 984 in front of Sarah Shields' committee, or maybe Sarah Shields can talk about that?
They indicated concerns with the part of the bill that's already been discussed that isn't in here, the insurance pool, you know, the pool.
Okay. Madam Chair, could I address that? Senator Walker, yes.
Yeah, thank you. They did testify on March 3rd of this year, and I have their written testimony, and their testimony was they were concerned about what was in the bill, what is no longer in the bill. That was pre all these amendments. They were concerned about the tax status issue that we were addressing in 984. And when that bill left Senator Shields' committee on 6205, there was no objection on the record by SAFE. But it's my understanding, and we'll ask Mr. Davey, they did a full court press in the House. So I'd like to ask some questions about that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Davey, why don't you come on up and tell us about your concerns about the Dash A-19 amendments. Appreciate folks keeping comments to the Dash A-19 amendments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Chris Davey from SAFE Corporation. The Dash A-19 amendments, as you heard, came from Senate Bill 984. I can't remember whether we testified on that bill when it came out of the Senate General Government Committee. It took a lot of forms before it finally came out of that committee. When Senate Bill 984 was up for hearing on the House side, we did testify there that the bill was unnecessary, and these particular provisions, if I could speak to, I guess it would be the Section 11, is that? Yeah, Section 11. Subsection 1 says that the DCBS director shall adopt rules for the consistent application of rates and so on. The director of DCBS already has broad authority for regulating the workers' compensation system, and certainly there are already rules in place that regulate rates and rating plans and rating systems, and so that particular portion of the bill seems to be redundant, and that was the testimony that was heard on the House side on that point. On the second point, subsection 2, this is a section that we think would be harmful to the competitiveness of the workers' compensation system in Oregon. This allows the director to establish rules that would make rate filings public, which are not public today. And I should point out, of course, that SAFE's records are always public anyway, so this doesn't affect the availability of SAFE's records or rate filings. But for private insurance companies, if these rules were adopted as they would be proposed under subsection 2, information that they consider to be private today, that is private today, could become public. And I've heard that private insurance companies, other than Liberty, have expressed concern about that because it would actually be a disincentive for insurance companies to come into Oregon and sell insurance in Oregon. And we're concerned about there being choice in the marketplace and there being a competitive system. And so we think it would be adverse to that interest.
Thank you, Mr. Davey. Questions? Sir Ringo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just point on the second paragraph, it says the director may adopt rules. It doesn't say shall. Does that still cause a problem? It seems like the director would exercise her discretion to adopt the rules in a way that wouldn't be harmful in the way you describe.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Ringo, it certainly leaves it to the discretion of the director, but it also suggests that that's something that there is some legislative interest in doing. And today, those filings are maintained private, and this would make those filings public. And I've heard from private insurance companies that they would view this as a disincentive to competing in Oregon.
Thank you.
Questions? Senator Atkinson?
Where are those insurance companies that express concern? Are they coming?
Senator Atkinson, Madam Chair, there was testimony on the House side about that.
Well, that was in March?
No, I think 6 weeks or so ago.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson. Senator Shields?
This issue is something that my interim general government committee also struggled with. Way back, well, a year and a half ago, Senator Frank Morris raised the issue of why the assigned risk pool was so big and so on and so forth. And so that's why that part of the bill was included in 984. This puts us back to where we started from. Why didn't you go to the Senate and argue about the bill? And when it came out of our committee, it passed 27-1. You didn't do a floor letter. You didn't speak at all on the issue on the Senate side, and then it gets to the House and gets essentially taken apart. I don't understand. I'm really struggling to understand why that happened.
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, I'm not sure that this has anything to do with the assigned risk portion of that bill. This is really speaking to the way that insurance companies price their business. Without it really doesn't affect the assigned risk program at all.
Any further questions, Senator Shields? Senator Walker.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I disagree with you, Mr. Davey, respectfully so. This bill, as it left the Senate, was a darn good bill, and I'm going to ask you questions about how that bill ended up not being such a darn good bill later and why we're here today. But this bill is aimed at making sure that everyone has fair rates and fair access to the system, and that objective criteria are applied. Wouldn't you agree?
Madam Chair, Senator Walker, I think the part, there was language in a previous version of this bill that talked about rating criteria and standards for rating, but I don't believe that's in this amendment.
Well, then you and I will continue to disagree on that, Mr. Davey, as we have on a number of things. But let me ask you this question. I want to follow up on what Senator Shields said. When this bill was in our General Government Committee on June 2nd, you were in the room, as you were always in the room, every time we had a hearing on SAFE legislation, though your hired lobbyist, Mr. Campbell, was never in the room, ever. And we'll get to that in a minute. But Mr. Davey, you did not come up and testify in opposition to what this chair did in his committee. I looked at my notes here. You were in the room. The bill went out, and as Senator Shields said, it passed 27-1. What changed for you in the House?
Madam Chair, Senator Walker, my recollection of the hearing on June 2nd was that there was no testimony on the amendments that were ultimately amended into Senate Bill 984.
Well,
I may be mistaken, but that's my recollection.
Yeah, Mr. Davey, most lobbyists in this building know not to argue with my notes, and Mr. Jack Monroe actually testified at the hearing, so I will correct you about that. And Ms. Corey Streisinger also testified, and we took a short break, and we hashed out the deal, and we cut it, and we moved it. Let me ask you this question. Mr. Campbell is a hired lobbyist, contract lobbyist for Safe Corporation, is he not?
That's correct.
He has a contract that is not cancelable, is that correct?
Not cancelable?
Yes. I mean, does he have a special contract that you cannot cancel his contract without a certain amount of, actually, it's a contract that doesn't allow you to cancel it without his agreement, is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Walker, it's a contract that has a set expiration date.
Well,
I'm not aware. I don't have that in front of me. I didn't come here prepared to talk about that today, so I can't remember what other provisions are in that contract.
All right. Well, Madam Chair, if I could continue, this is going to lead somewhere. I promise.
Senator Walker, I just asked that you sort of stick to the parameters of the dash A19.
Yeah, I'm trying to do that,
Thank
Madam
you.
Chair. I'm trying to get to the bottom of this, and I don't have the contract in front of me, but the contract has to be agreed to. So my point is, did Safe Corporation
give an order to its contract lobbyist to go over to the House and kill Senate Bill 984 and any amendment that came over here that we're addressing today. Did you give that order to your contract lobbyist, Mr. Larry Campbell?
Madam Chair, Senator Walker, we expressed to our contract lobbyist what our position was on this bill, and he has spoken to members of the House about it. I've not been present during those discussions.
You've not been present during the discussions. But you know that he's been, you've expressed your concerns, and you know that there was agreement to accept these amendments from the House, and suddenly there's not an agreement. Is your contract lobbyist involved in that?
Madam Chair, Senator Walker, I don't know anything about any agreements that exist and don't exist.
All right. Madam Chair, it's unfortunate we don't have Ms. Rockland here to answer these very good questions, and I'll be submitting her a letter. I assume she has a day off celebrating her raise that she got for her new position, but I'm very disappointed. The A20s take out the emergency clause. I think that can go forward, but I understand where you're at, Madam Chair, and I'm very disappointed in the answers that I got today.
Thank you, Senator Walker. Thank you, Mr. Davey. We appreciate you joining us on short notice. Anybody else having to testify in House Bill 3238? I'm going to close the public hearing, open the work session on House Bill 3238. The chair would move the -A18 amendments to House Bill 3238. Discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none. Ordered. Chair would move House Bill 3238 as amended with the -A18 amendments to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Ringo.
I just want to say I share Senator Walker's concerns about safe accountability. And I think it's going to be an ongoing issue. I think she's done great work on this issue, and I hope SAFE responds to those concerns as aggressively as they can.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Walker. We appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you for the courtesy, Madam Chair.
No problem.
Hi, Madam
Senator Shields.
I'd like to join Senator Ringo in expressing concern that SAFE didn't answer the question.
Okay. Would you please call the roll?
No.
Senator
Ringo? Aye.
Senator
Shields?
Aye.
Aye. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Senator Shields, appreciate if you would carry the underlying bill. Okay, Mr. Senator Przanski. Ms. Harris, let's move down to 2668 and 3121. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2668. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us about the bill?
Thanks, Madam Chair. House Bill 2668 authorizes counties to vacate interior lot lines that affect private property without a hearing if the county has the approval of the owners of the affected and abutting private property, and the planning director makes specified findings.
Thank you, Senator Przanski. We appreciate you joining us. You are the only witness signed up for both of these bills. I'm going to open a public hearing on both bills so you can stay up here for both.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. These two bills, I'll start off with House Bill 2668. This is a bill that came to my attention through Douglas County Planning Department. I know that Representative Morgan has been involved in these bills on the House side, starting off that they passed on the House floor the 56. Zero vote. The House Bill 2668 actually is going to try to make the process a little smoother and streamlined for individuals who own lots that are adjacent to each other and they want to utilize those lots for building on industrial or for commerce or commercial areas, and they need to make a change with the interior lot line. It's my understanding the paperwork that I've submitted to you from Douglas County sets forth the current process of how that can currently be done. There's three different processes. The one that's being proposed in 2668 would, in fact, streamline this and make it to be done much quicker at less cost, and would require, as the council said, the agreement of all property owners of that parcel or those parcels to make certain that they are in agreement. I will stop with that unless you need more testimony.
Questions? I think you're off the hook.
Madam Chair.
Senator Farrielli.
There's a lot of collectors of classic tin that are going to be shedding a tear over the loss of this valuable resource.
think that's the next
bill. The next bill, yeah, okay. It is.
All right, so moving along, and well into a public hearing on House Bill 3121. Senator Pruzanski.
Madam Chair and committees, House Bill 3121 will, in fact, probably increase the recycling of tin and steel. What this bill actually is going to attempt to do is deal with a problem that faced with many locations within the state. Douglas County has brought it to my attention, again, through their process with the planning department, where you have abandoned or junk vehicles that are very hard to, let's say, dispose of and deal with on a more immediate basis. What this process will propose and provide is what's known, or what would be known, as a junk slip. That program would require that the authorized authority, depending on the roadway or the location of where the vehicle may be left and abandoned, can in fact be removed if it has a value of less than $500, and the individual who has the legal authority over the vehicle is agreeing to have it go forward through this process. What it does require is that the local authority who's going to issue the junk slip take certain provisions and make certain that they do in fact follow those compliance to document the vehicle as its current state, that it is has a value of less than $500, and that the person that's requiring or requesting, I should say, the removal has legal authority. It should be noted that the person does not have to actually have title to the vehicle to be legal owner. The purpose for this is, again, an area, as it was described to me by the planning department in Douglas County, where vehicles are taken out sometimes into vacant public land, maybe out into the dunes area, and just basically a vehicle is stripped, left, and there's no way of really moving the vehicle without going through a certain process. What they're attempting to do is streamline it and be able to move it out quicker than what current law provides, and making sure there's a safeguard that the vehicle is not going to in the future be retitled, including a salvage title, and that the slip will operate as to giving the permission for the record driver to actually remove the vehicle immediately and to dispose, dismantle, or crush it. So that's where the recycling would come in.
Thank you. And Senator Pruzanski, would you please extend apologies to your constituents? I know a number of folks would have liked to have come up from Douglas County to participate in these hearings. Obviously, at this point in the session, the choice was either to have a hearing and move the bills or to have a hearing in a couple of days and not have the bills move. So,
Madam Chair, I think they fully appreciated that. I should put on the record this bill, 3121, did pass off the House floor at 54-0 vote. And they understood and actually have provided me with additional copies to make sure their words could be, let's say, embedded in writing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions for Senator Pruzanski.
The future collectors of vintage and classic automobiles will remember this day.
And
hopefully they're worth more than $500, but they won't be subject to it.
Senator Pruzanski, just for your information, we do have conflict amendments that are dash A3 amendments to 3121. So just for your information.
Okay. Thank you all for the
note. All right. Close the public hearing on House Bills 2668 and 3121. Open a work session on House Bills 2668. Chair would move the bill to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Chair would open work session on House Bill 3121. Move the dash A3 amendments. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would move the bill as amended to the Senate floor with due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Pruzanski will carry both House Bill 2668 and House Bill 3121. All right. You guys want to do executive appointments now, or do you want to do Senate Bill 640?
Your choice, Madam Chair.
Okay.
640, we have witnesses
waiting. Let's do Senate Bill 640. We apparently have not had a public hearing on this little bill, so I know there are a number of folks wishing to testify. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us a little bit about the bill? James, why don't you bring us the sign-up sheet? And hello.
I missed his vote on this. Douglas County.
I'm sorry. Oh, there was a hearing.
In the judiciary?
No, it was transportation committee. So, transportation. We will
Just I know that the witnesses will be brief. Is there a sign-up sheet, James? Okay. Sheriff Ramirez, did you want to come up? Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Raul Ramirez, Marin County Sheriff, and the information we had received was that there wouldn't be no testimony provided here during this proceeding. So.
I'm in a good mood. You're lucky. Doesn't happen very often these days.
Well, thank you, and as you well know, 640-18 is a has been amended from its original to reflect adding the issue of facial recognition to Oregon's driver's license system. And again, the whole idea here is to address the issue of fraudulent application and issuance of driver's license with individuals that are providing documents and obtaining an Oregon driver's license. So this modified version does not include the fingerprint portion that we had asked for biometrics, but this is moving in the right direction, again, trying to streamline those individuals that should not obtain a valid driver's license with fraudulent documents. This will help curtail that problem. We have a serious problem in Oregon, as you well know, so this is moving it in the right direction.
Great. Did you wish to add anything?
If I could, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name's Walt Beglaw. I'm the Marin County District Attorney here on behalf of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. I really don't have much new to add in terms of our support of this, other than this is clearly a step in the right direction underlying much of the problem we see with manufacture of fake IDs. Using fake IDs is identity theft, and what's fueling that is the meth problem. So we're strongly in support of this. It does go in the right direction, and we'll close the door at least in Oregon for what seems to be a rampant problem, particularly in my office here in Marin County.
Thank you. Any questions, Senator Ferriero?
I've got a question, Madam Chair. Just appreciation for the steadfast and unwavering support from both the District Attorneys Association members and the Sheriff's Association members, and particularly Sheriff Ramirez,
who's been extremely persistent.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you joining us today. Let's see. I would like, Ms. Freeman, did you want to come up and testify about Section 7? And then we have a question about Section 12. And then Mr. Spedanky will save the best for last.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. We have reviewed the Dash 18 amendments, and we can't implement this bill. There's one small technical glitch that we didn't know in Section 7. Under Section 7.3b, the way that the language reads today is that an operator of the equipment, and this would be equipment that would be verifying the biometric data that we would be collecting, our employees at DMV would need to have their photograph taken every time they logged on to issue a driver's license. This happened, I believe, it's a consequence of changing the Section 2 definition of biometric data when they removed fingerprinting and made it facial recognition. That created this little glitch. So we would suggest that perhaps we changed 7.3b to say something to the effect that the production of the license only by equipment that requires verification of the operator's identity before a license may be produced would clear up that.
So we're on lines 2 through 4 on page 6, right?
Yes, Madam.
Okay. And you'd like it to read the production of the license only by equipment that requires verification of
the operator's identity.
Operator's identity. Before the license may be produced.
That's correct.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, for the record, Robin Freeman, the Oregon Department of Transportation.
Thank you. The other issue that had, came up is Section 12 in terms of the competitive bidding provision. Can you speak to that as well?
Madam Chair, I think I'm going to have Mr. McClellan speak to you about that. With me today is Tom McClellan. As of Monday, he'll be the interim administrator for DMV.
Okay. And, Ms. Freeman, I'm going to write you a note and see if we can't get that little change distracted right now and see if we can't get this.
I have a note.
You have a note? Great. All right, sir, take it away. Section 12.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom McClellan, Driver Motor Vehicle Services. Section 12 deals with a, we have a contract today with Digimarc, an Oregon company. The existing contract, we don't believe, will allow us to implement the bill within the scope of that current contract. So Section 12 is providing to us is the ability to amend the contract to be able to do this, make these changes, to do the facial recognition, and to extend the length of the contract to recover those costs, basically, for that contractor.
Okay.
So it's some flexibility that we do not have an existing contract without going out again for a full bid.
All right. Any further questions of these two? Senator Shields.
On this Section 12, right?
Yes.
I'm just looking at something from the Service Employees Union, and I'm disturbed. The note that I got is, we know this isn't being moved today, but for discussion. And then they start in, and in one section of the thing, they strongly urge the removal of Section 12 from 640. Or, excuse me, yes. And the dash, yeah, the 18 amendments. I'm just, have you seen this at all? I just want this in record. Have you seen this?
I've seen it, Senator Shields.
Okay. Have you got concerns there?
Well, I think this gentleman just answered my concerns.
Okay.
So,
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if I could just add, there are only two companies that do this work in the United States, and Digimarc is the company that we have a contract with currently. They service 38 states, so the chances are we go through a 2 to 3 year bid process at a significant cost and end up with the same vendor that we're using today. So that's a little bit extra information.
My apologies, Madam Chair. I'm just trying to catch up here.
That's okay.
Especially since they weren't in the room.
Right. And I think Ms. Stevens in the room. She probably wants to come. Do you want to come? Okay. You guys can go. Come on up. Ms. Stevens, Mr. Fedanke, whatever your name is. I was saying Mr. Meyer, but that would not be appropriate, would it, Mr. Fedanke? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Brown, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Stevens. I'm with SEIU Local 503, Oregon Public Employees Union. We do have a series of concerns about the bill and about the technology and the implementation of the technology. But specifically, our concern did lie around Section 12. If there was a better way to craft language that specifically outlined the parameters by which the contracts need to be changed, addressed, modified, extended, that would make us feel better. The language that currently is in the contract allows the agency, or requires the agency, to completely circumnavigate the public contracting code. And we think it's extremely important, if there are a number of things at stake, well-paying jobs with health care benefits, which potentially could be eliminated, the nature of the work, which is incredibly sensitive as we look at Oregon being in the top 10 states of having problems of identity theft, and just the sensitive nature in terms of what's at stake for an individual's citizenship and driving rights and those important status pieces of information for identification in Oregon, that there should be a process by which there can be public input, there can be accountability, there can be a series of expectations laid out in some kind of a way that is more consistent with the code versus completely eliminating any type of competition. And if there are, in fact, two companies who do this work, why, in fact, would we not even consider looking at the other company, and why would we not even consider looking at parameters by which the contract would be extended?
Thank you, Ms. Stevens. Mr. McClellan, and I think weren't in the room when he testified, but my understanding of this provision is that it is related directly to the contract that Digimarc currently has with the state of Oregon, an extension of the contract under the circumstances as we are sort of expanding the requirements under the contracts. But we'll probably, if we can't get the amendments, take a few minutes recess and take a look at this provision. So anyway, I appreciate your input and have your testimony. Mr. Fidanke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, David Fidanke, Executive Director, ACLU of Oregon. ACLU continues to strongly oppose Senate Bill 640 because it will require Oregonians to submit to collection of biometric data when applying for driver's license permit or identification card from the Department of Transportation. While the Dash 18 amendments are an improvement over earlier versions, the bottom line is that this bill will establish an infrastructure that could easily be expanded later to collect more intrusive individual data without improving either safety or security in return. In particular, the reliance of the Dash 18 amendments on facial recognition software will likely lead either to very little additional protection from identity theft, or thousands of Oregonians improperly being refused license renewals, and possibly both. Adding insult to this injury, the Dash 18 amendments will require Oregonians to pay up to $3 each, plus countless hours waiting in DMV lines for the privilege of being guinea pigs in the rollout of experimental software systems that are unlikely to work. Given congressional passage of the Real ID Act this spring, it is premature and costly for the state to implement a biometric system that may not comply with Real ID. According to preliminary estimates by the National Conference of State Legislatures, the new federal law is expected to require an investment by states of up to $750 million over the next 5 years, plus an additional $50 to $75 million each year once the system is in operation. Congress has not appropriated any funds to help states cover those costs. Department of Homeland Security is not even expected to propose draft rules to implement Real ID for a number of months. At this point, we don't know what will be required under the regulations. As you know, the Real ID Act does not take effect until 2008. ACLU has been joined in opposition to the Real ID Act by over 600 organizations across the country. We should wait until we have direction, at least under the proposed rules for the Real ID Act, before implementing biometrics in Oregon. Facial recognition software technology in particular is still crude in its technology and accuracy. A review by experts of the National Institute of Standards and Technology found false rejection rates for facial recognition software of 43% when photos of subjects were compared to photos taken of the same individuals 18 months or earlier. That was a 2000 study. Mr. Dewey, who is the lobbyist for Digimarc, has provided us a more recent study that was prepared by the National Institute of Standards and Technology and representatives from DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Product Agency, and other experts. And that study, which is a 2002 study, found some improvements in the software. But let me give you a sense of how far away from being ready to take this stuff to market it is at this point. The study talks about the verification rate, which is when used to verify the identity of an individual, the percentage of times when the software succeeds in matching the individual to themselves from a prior photograph. The study found that in a database of 37,437 people, the best systems only verified correctly 73% of the time. The study found that for every doubling of the database size, the accuracy would go down 2 to 3 percentage points. Now, the DMV database has somewhere between 2.5 million and 3 million individuals in it. That means that the verification rate of facial recognition software will be more on the order of 50%, maybe less. In addition, because the photographs that will be matched will have been taken 8 years prior to when the new photographs are taken, because, of course, Oregon law only requires new photos every 8 years to renew a driver's license. The verification rate will be even lower than that. So that means if DMV employees are relying on the software that you would be authorizing them to buy in this bill, the software is going to be wrong more often than it's right. That means your constituents are going to be standing in very, very long lines at DMV, are going to be very upset because their identity has been rejected by DMV, and they are required to come back for a second trip, maybe a third trip, maybe a fourth trip to verify their identity. I would submit to you that this software should not be tested in Oregon, that instead DMV should spend the interim with members of this legislature figuring out how to work out the bugs to have a centralized system of issuing driver's licenses, because even those parts of the bill are not without problems. That is the most important act that Oregon can take to reduce identity theft. That will make a difference, but we're not even convinced DMV can do that with the provisions of this bill.
Mr. Pedanke, I hear your concerns, and I'm kind of struggling with the whole false identity issue, and Oregon obviously has a problem. I suspect we're not the only state that has this problem, but we obviously have a huge problem in the state about folks' ability to get driver's license that don't belong to them.
I agree.
So, for me, fingerprinting was extremely oppressive. The national legislation is extremely oppressive. This seemed like the least worst of the alternatives. Talk to me about how the centralized system would address the false identity issues and what other solution you would put in front of us to address that issue.
Madam Chair, I think the centralized system of issuing licenses is very important to prevent people from obtaining multiple licenses with different names. And we are in support of moving in that direction. One of the concerns we have is what's going to happen with signatures. And as far as I know, there hasn't been any testimony before a Senate committee on that issue from DMV or those who are moving these Dash 18 amendments. Under the current system, people sign their license when it is given to them at DMV in front of a DMV employee. Assuming that their identity has been verified, that is an additional check that merchants and others can use in checking the identity of someone later, is to compare signatures. If you're issuing licenses from Salem or some other central location, how is the signature going to get on that license? Is it going to be digitized in the DMV office? Is it going to be maintained in the DMV database? If so, that would raise security concerns. If not, if DMV is going to send licenses out without signatures, that also raises security concerns. I think that's one of the issues that we believe needs to be thought through completely before the state spends a lot of money to implement a centralized system.
So you would use a signature ID process as opposed to a photo ID
process?
Oh, I
think the photo is very important, Madam Chair.
Okay.
It's the facial recognition software that I think is a waste of money at this time. I think one of the checks that can be implemented now is to, at least with renewals, to make sure, or replacement of lost, quote-unquote, lost IDs and licenses, is in a centralized system to compare the photograph visually with the photograph that is currently on file with DMV. That doesn't take facial recognition software to do. To try to catch people with multiple licenses, facial recognition software may be helpful at some point. We just don't think it's ready yet to justify the state of Oregon spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to make that investment.
All right. Questions for Mr. Verdanke, Ms. Stevens? Senator Ringo.
Thank you.
Will you call?
Dave, the ACLU Civil Liberties Union, your organization is focused on civil liberties. So I listened to your arguments about the cost to the taxpayer, and I'm thinking, well, there's about 300 other bills in this building. If that was your concern, that you could be fighting if it was really an expense issue. And same, I mean, and angry constituents because this isn't working, people waiting in long lines at DMVs. I don't think any of those are the concerns of your organization.
Madam Chair, Senator Ringo.
So my question is, what is your civil liberties concern?
The underlying concern is twofold. One is the potential invasion of privacy represented by expanding the DMV database to include personally identifying information that may not be secure and may not make us any safer or prevent identity theft. So our interest here is in making sure that you solve this problem in ways that actually make a difference, that are cost effective, and that don't jeopardize the privacy of Oregonians.
Well, to me, obviously this won't prevent identity theft. Will it slow it down? Will it prevent some identity theft? Will it make it more difficult for identity theft to occur? I mean, to me, it's a step in that direction. I'm more interested in your concern about the security of the information.
Madam Chair and Senator Ringo, that's why I brought up the issue of the signatures. If you create a database that has personally identifying information, then you create a database that has value to people who engage in identity theft. A number of financial institutions have had their databases compromised in recent months. A number of credit bureaus have had their databases compromised. And authorities, law enforcement authorities, still don't know how those things occurred. One way these kinds of things occur is by having someone on the inside that downloads the information onto a hard drive or some other storage capacity and sells it on the open market to criminals. So, I think it's very relevant for you all to be concerned about whether or not this technology is going to work or whether it actually could cause more problems than it solves. If you want to do something to make it look like you're solving the problem, then the Dash 18 amendments you should certainly support. But I would submit to you that I don't think you have enough information today to make a value judgment about whether these amendments are really going to make a difference in preventing identity theft or whether they're actually going to cause more problems.
Thank you.
Senator Ferriola, do you have a question?
No, Madam Chair. It's more a statement. That is probably the finest cloud of smoke I've ever seen blown over a bill in my life. And let me just try to shed maybe some fresh air into that cloud of smoke. People in Oregon will not be asked to submit any data they're not currently submitting. It's a photograph. There's a photograph on every driver's license already. It's how we store the photograph and how we recall the data that provides the protection. And, Madam Chair, I'm circulating a visual that was produced by Sheriff Ramirez when he advocated so valiantly for this bill of a subject who obtained 6 driver's licenses at 6 different Department of Motor Vehicles outlets within a very short period of time, simply using changes in his date of birth, data that would be submitted for requesting the driver's license, and fraudulently obtaining legitimate Department of Motor Vehicles driver's licenses. Madam Chair, it's shocking to see 6 examples of fraudulent identification where the simple ability to call up a photograph and compare those biometrically would have prevented or at least given hits that was a human worker within the Department of Motor Vehicles could have had the opportunity to compare and stop the issuance, which is clearly in furtherance of a criminal conspiracy. And it's at risk. Every Oregonian's at risk. Whether or not your data is lost because you dropped a wallet or somebody snatched your purse or got on the internet and figured out what your date of birth and social security number was. As long as you could provide a credible series of data to the identification issuing agencies, you could get phony ID. And, Madam Chair, I just want to point out, we already have our photographs taken. We already signed the driver's license. We provide our home addresses. We provide our height, weight, and other biometric data. It's all right there on the driver's license. The only difference here is that we have a searchable database that would allow the Department of Motor Vehicle to stop the scam and to prevent the leakage of legitimate data and identification into the criminal community. Madam Chair, I'd just like to show the camera that data. If they could zoom in on that, there's that individual.
I don't think it works that way, sir.
Those are six pictures of Senator Atkinson.
Oh, I was just telling Senator Ringo, this guy wasn't even like the saint. I mean, he didn't even use good names like the saint. He used John Jones.
but he was successful. Well, the point is that wasn't just an isolated case. There were literally dozens of cases where the ability to compare photographic biometric would have prevented the issuance of phony documentation. This was used in a criminal conspiracy, and it will happen again and again until we do something about it. So, Mr. Kadanke, I appreciate the concerns about the sanctity and security of people's identity. We're already providing this information. The bill only adds a searchable database. I'm sorry that that's the subject of terror for some people, but since they already have the information, I think we ought to use it in the most intelligent way possible and protect Oregonians from identity theft.
Madam Chair, could I respond?
Thank you. Would you like to respond?
Thank you. And Senator Farioli, thank you for the high compliment. truly high praise.
And I think that comes from a great source. He would know. He would know.
Doggone right.
Senator Ringo. Okay.
I completely agree with you in theory that facial recognition software, if it works, would do that. My fear is that with the state of the software at this point in time, there are going to be so many people denied renewal of licenses by the software that the actual criminals are going to get lost in the buzz. That the employees who are screening these photographs are going to be deluged with a mountain of individuals whose licenses are being rejected by the software. They'll make it more difficult. It's easy to see what went wrong with that photograph, with that exhibit of six identical photographs. But it's not going to be easy if half of every of all applications the software is kicking out for a DMV employee to look at. It's going to be very easy to lose the criminals in that fuzz.
Okay. Mr. Vinay, I guess I think what I hear you saying in terms of your concern is that similar to what's happening at the airports where all of us are getting searched, thorough searches, everything, I mean, like looking for a needle in a haystack, airport officials are really being deluged by all of us individuals and trying to find that needle in the haystack. And what you're saying is the work will be so difficult for DMV that they aren't going to be able to weed out the bad actors.
Exactly, Madam Chair. And if they don't do that, if they make value judgments on their own, then I would submit to you the software isn't going to be much help to them, that they would do just as well by pulling up photographs on their own.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vedanke. Thank you, Ms. Stevens. We're going to bring up Mr. Dewey. I would like to point out that the addresses used in those, all of those false license plates, I believe belong to Senator Shields. So I just think that's very interesting. Mr. Dewey, why don't you tell us why you think this will work?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Mike Dewey, representing Digimart. First of all, I wanted to point out in the Section 12 language, it's permissive may. It doesn't say shall, and we basically had supported that. So we would sit down with the department and see if we could work out an arrangement. And so that would take place if this bill passes. So I think those concerns are alleviated. With regard to the error rate, I was somewhat surprised when ACLU talked about the 43% error rate on facial recognition, and I finally figured out what they were talking about. They were comparing apples and oranges. They were talking about surveillance kind of outside type of activities as opposed to a controlled environment where you have somebody sit down within, let's say, 3 feet, 4 feet, or whatever, the same pictures taken, same angle. And then you can get the logarithm. You can get the specifics for making sure that there is not an error rate. And the study I provided them is the accuracy is 95%. Let me say that states are moving in this direction. We are not the the pioneers here. We operate in states that provide this already, and it's very effective.
Which states, Mr. Dewey?
I have Kansas, Colorado, Massachusetts, Alabama, Illinois, Connecticut, and Oklahoma, and then they're bidding it in Texas and Virginia. Now, that's what I have based upon the information I received today. The other feature of this bill is central issuance, and I say that is something that will happen anyway, I think, because of the Real ID Act. Basically, what we're doing there is getting the information verified up front and storing it. And if you're going to do that, you're not going to be able to provide the license over the counter. It can't happen because you're not going to be able to verify the information at that point in time. Also, you will. I believe this is true. We, as Senator Ferraioli said, this information, the photo, is already digitized to begin with. So when you get your license, the individual who is working with you at DMV, and they do a very good job, is able to take your photo up right now if you're in the system to verify whether or not that is the person. And there would be a red flag if Senator Ringo looks like Senator Ferraioli or vice versa.
Oh,
that could be positive for somebody. I'm not going to say who. So I think the ACLU concerns, because of where we're going in the technology, we believe it works. We work in a number of states, and we find that it does work. So with that, I would be happy to answer any questions. I don't want to take a lot of your time. It's 5:30, and I know you want to do something more important than hearing me.
Questions?
Sure.
Chair Ringo.
I have a question that may be more directed to ODOT, but I'll ask you. This bill says it requires ODOT to do this, and given the possibility of technology problems, why don't we just allow them and say they may do this? And then if they want to implement it, fine, and if they have problems, at least they're not somehow hamstrung by legislation.
Senator Brown and Senator Ringo, I would just basically say that they could, ODOT, the DMV, could have these conversations with us tomorrow. I think it's from the standpoint of the legislature, a policy question as to whether or not you want them to move in this direction, and that is a mandate that you provide to them, and I think that's your responsibility.
Is there anything in statute right now that prevents them from doing this? Maybe he's nodding yes.
Well,
ODOT's nodding yes.
Okay. There is, because of the contract that we have.
I see.
And we'd have to, we bid the contract on a per card basis. And we enjoy working with these folks, and we don't want to get into a protracted discussion about, okay, what is it going to cost? So I think it helps moving in this direction.
Okay. Hey, Madam Chair, I guess.
Senator Ringo.
I guess this is a question for ODOT, but do they prefer a mandate, or would they just prefer a permission, an ability to do this if they want to?
Sure. Ms. Freeman, Ms. Plank, does somebody want to come up? Mr.
Thank
McClellan?
You.
Oh, Mr. Dewey, no.
I thought he was going to beat a hasty.
Yes.
He had a golf game.
He was going for the door.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Robin Freeman, Oregon Department of Transportation. We don't have a position on this measure. We really feel like it's a policy decision that rests with the legislature.
But it wouldn't offend you to have this requirement?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, no, we would implement this as it stands with the technology fix.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Dewey, any other questions to Ringo? Thanks for coming back out. Hey, Ringo, did you have
any? No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Dewey, for anybody here that's now that you're up here, so what's the biometric part of this? I mean, is it just a fancy word for saying photograph?
If I may, Madam Chair, as I understand it, when you use the term biometric, fingerprints can be a biometric.
Correct.
Retina scans can be a biometric. DNA could be a biometric.
And in this circumstance, it's the photograph.
And we thought it might be, so we had at one point in time in a provision two forms of biometric, and I remember that Senator Krasanski said, well, that could be DNA. And so we talked about then fingerprinting and facial recognition, but we got to the point that with regard to the concerns of the members of the legislature as to what is biometrics, it seemed as though, one, facial recognition does work, and two, it was something that was the least intrusive because you already have the photo. Nobody knows, you know, what you're doing with a photo in terms of setting it up in the software for identifying other people in the program.
Senator Ferriello.
Madam Chair, I think the art in this case isn't the digitization of the photograph. It's the algorithms that are created from the measurements that are taken on the photograph, the distance of the pupils apart, the facial features. Essentially, that algorithm is reduced to a string of numbers that can be searched in nanoseconds by a computer, and when those are matched, then that would kick out two photos for physical comparison.
Thank you. That was very helpful.
And you may, the department may decide, Madam Chair and members of the committee, what the match is going to be. It could be 1 to 15 best that are closest. It could be 1 to 2. Those decisions would be made administratively, and it would be best based on the technology. But there's a lot of leeway here for the department to make those kind of decisions.
Thank you. One last question, Mr. Dewey. The Section 12, again, you currently have a contract with the Department of Transportation, correct?
Digimart does. I do.
I mean, Digimart, the company that you represent. And
an Oregon-based company, by the way.
Well, that's great to hear. We love supporting Oregon companies. Without Section 12, my understanding is you wouldn't be able to... the terms of your contract, the contract that Digimart has with the state of Oregon, would be extremely problematic to enforce or comply. Ms. Freeman, maybe that's a better question for you. But,
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes. We would not be able to extend our current contract to accommodate this legislation. And we're in the first year of a five-year contract with these folks.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate you joining us
this
afternoon.
Thank you.
Let's see. Anybody else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 640? I'm going to close the public hearing. Let's go into a work session on executive appointments. We're waiting for, I'm hoping, some language to address some of the issues in the Dash 18s. Chair would move into work session on executive appointments.
Yeah, she did. Ms. Plank did. I had a conversation.
Okay. Let's see. Chair would... Chair would open a work session in the Oregon State Lottery Commission, move the appointment of Ms. Pamela Fogg to the Oregon State Lottery Commission.
Chair?
Senator Ringo.
I questioned her... about her opinion on gambling and the scope of the lottery and when it's appropriate to raise revenue. And I have concerns with some of her answers. Frankly, I think she's a very, very pleasant woman. I think she is not well informed on some of the issues surrounding lottery, particularly some of the political issues. I traded phone calls with her today because I was hoping to chat with her further and perhaps set up a meeting with her. and I was not able to connect with her. We, as I said, we traded calls, but I would like the opportunity to speak with her directly before we move her forward.
Sarah Shields.
Well, I didn't have the opportunity to do what Senator Ringo did, but I didn't think her answers were very strong, and it might be helpful if he just kind of got a little bit of clarity to some of the stuff. I mean, several times she says, I haven't thought of that. I hadn't thought of this, that, this issue and that issue, and something as important as lottery. It did concern me a little bit. But whatever you want to do, it's fine by me.
Sir Ferrioli.
Madam Chair, I think that her answers indicated to me that she hadn't preconceptions or an axe to grind.
That's true.
But that she did have a certification as a CPA, and this is a slot reserved for a CPA, and I thought that finding a CPA willing to serve on a public commission, which is a very rigorous commission that will require a lot of her time, seemed to me to be rather extraordinary. And so I thought because she indicated a willingness to learn on the issues, that she hadn't preconceptions, and that she was highly qualified, made her an excellent applicant for this position. I don't necessarily want to put people on commissions and boards that have all the answers. I want them to go through a learning curve and be prepared to represent the citizens to their best ability. So I thought she was a great applicant.
All right, Senator Ringo, here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to go ahead and move forward on the appointment. If you want to excuse yourself or vote no, that's fine. But I would appreciate your willingness to talk with her before this appointment comes to the floor. I'm extremely concerned given the rapidity which the session is drawing to a close that this appointment get lost in the shuffle. And I'm hoping we won't have to come back until September for e-board and executive appointments. So,
I guess I would ask what the rush is. Is there a vacancy that requires immediate filling in order for the commission to function?
Ms. Gosseran, we see you shaking her head, and the answer is yes.
Oh, no, make her testify, ma'am.
Okay, come on up. Ms. Gosseran, welcome.
Nancy Gosseran, Office of the Governor for Executive Appointments. There is a vacancy right now that exists on that board. It is for the designated CPA slot, and there is a concern because the role of the commission is to monitor the revenues created, and there is not that expertise at the table currently.
Senator
Ringo.
When is the lottery? How often does the Lottery Commission meet?
They meet every month on the last Friday of the month for about 4 hours.
Well, if he's not going to be appointed by the last Friday of this month, I appreciate that. I think we do need to be careful. This lot of the commission makes important decisions. And just for the record, Madam Chair, I will be voting no, and then it's not because I think she's unqualified, but I think he needs to be better informed, and I need to understand what her position is on gambling in our state and the role of gambling for supporting public services.
And that's fair, Senator Ringo. I think she was pretty clear in her statements before the committee that she was not a huge fan of gaming. She's aware of the consequences, but she was also very realistic that she and her child and her parents had all attended public schools in Oregon, and she's very aware that this is a source of funding for public education in Oregon. So my sense is that she was a very ordinary Oregonian, hadn't been involved in the intricate politics of this issue, that she certainly has the qualifications as a CPA to serve in this slot. I appreciate the fact that you would like to speak with her. I'm sorry that we weren't able to make that happen today. Hopefully it can happen before her appointment comes to the floor. So, thank you, Ms. Gosseran.
Thank you.
Any further discussion on this position? Would you please call the roll, James?
No.
Senator Ringo?
No.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. I'll carry this one. Open a work session on the Home Care Commission. Chair would move Scott Lay to the Home Care Commission. Any discussion? Any objection?
So ordered. Would like, oh, and know what I'm going to do with the rest of these. Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service Chair would move Matthew Fisher and Jack Lortz appointment and reappointment, Ted Wheeler and Beth Fox. These are extremely talented group of folks, very busy. I hope they have the time available to serve on this commission. Any further discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would move Peggy Miller to the State Workforce Investment Board. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Let's open a work session on the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. I would move Mr. Mario Alba to the position and to as a reappointment to a position. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Open a work session on the Energy Facility Siting Council. Chair would move Martha Dibley. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Open a work session on the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board. Chair would move Carolyn Ramey and Bob Wheel. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Oregon Racing Commission. Chair would move Todd Thorne. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Oregon Transportation Commission. Any discussion? Any objection?
You forgot to say who we're appointing for the record.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. We're appointing Mr. Stuart Foster of Medford to the Oregon Transportation Commission. Any discussion to that motion? Any objection? So ordered. Last but not least, State Board of Higher Ed. Chair would move John Van Schlegel to the State Board of Higher Ed. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Sarah Shields, would you like to carry these appointments except for?
Sure.
Okay, that'd be great. We'll have Sarah Shields carry these appointments. We'll have, I'll do Ms. Fogg separately, and once it gets to the floor, we'll have Sarah Shields carry them in block. All right, why don't we take a 10-minute recess, see if we can find some amendments to Senate Bill 640. We'll be back at 5 to 6 and hopefully have you out of here by 6 because I know how busy you all are. We'll be in recess for 10 minutes. You ready, James? All right, we're back on the record. Let's see, we only have three copies of the Dash 19.
Here, here's some. Here you go.
I have one. I'm fine. Mr. McClellan, do these address the concerns raised by the department earlier?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, they do.
Okay. As I'm checking on line 6, I'm sorry, page 6, lines 2 through 4, it reads the production of the license only by equipment that requires verification of the identity of the operator of the equipment before a license may be produced. Only by equipment. Requires of the identity, so I think that does the trick. Okay, good. The other question I have is regarding Section 12 and a discussion about employees and whether there will be an impact on employees or not with the language in Section 12 regarding the contract.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Tom McClellan with DMV. It is not our anticipation that there be a negative impact on employees, that there be a reduction at all. In fact, the issuance of the temporary license in the field offices will probably be at least as much work as we're doing today to issue the original from the field offices, plus there will be some central issuance.
There may be more employees.
There may actually be more in that effect, yes.
That makes us all happy. Any other questions for Mr. McClellan? Yes. Okay. Sarah Shields.
From what I've heard talking in the hall, the day will come probably before long when pictures will be required every 4 years instead of every 8 years. Is that something you've heard? And wouldn't that also have a positive impact? I mean, you talk about more work. There's going to be more work.
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, we do not anticipate changing the 8-year driver's license. It is allowed within the Federal Real ID Act, and we just changed from the 4-year to the 8-year a few years ago. We plan to stick with that.
Okay, I just had some different information.
All right, Sarah Shields, and as we get older, we're all grateful that it's only 8 years instead of 4. All right.
I don't know. Some of us get prettier with age.
It's a good thing, Sarah Shields.
Thanks a lot.
All right. I wasn't referring to you. Let's close the public hearing. Let's open a work session. Sarah Farrioli.
Madam Chair, move the Dash
19-19 is the Senate Bill 640.
Senator Ferriola has moved the dash A-19s, no, it's just the 19s, to Senate Bill 640. Any discussion?
Any objection?
So ordered. Senator Ferrioli.
Madam Chair, move the amended version of Senate Bill 640 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Ferrioli has moved the Senate Bill 640 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Mr. Hendricks, we know you're listening. We appreciate your quick work in getting us the amendments. Despite my teachings by the good former chair of judiciary, Senator Neil Bryant, I like to avoid conceptual amendments. So, Mr. Hendricks, we appreciate your willingness to help us out this evening. Any further discussion? James, would you please call the roll?
Yes.
Senator Ringo?
Aye.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Ferriello?
Aye.
Chair Brown? Chair Bethai? Motion carries.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ringo?
Senator Atkins had a matter for the committee.
Okay.
Madam Chair. Both Senator Ringo and I were outside, and we'd both like to vote on two quick bills. If we could make a motion to suspend the rules temporarily, just so that we could both vote on two bills that Senator Pruzanski so eloquently presented.
All right. Senator Atkinson moves to suspend the rules.
For the purpose of voting on House Bill 3121
and 2668, it will not change the outcome.
It will not change the outcome, and both Senator Ringo and I both like to do this thing bipartisanly.
And it will not delay Sunny Lie.
It will not delay Sunny Lie, and we promise not to have a minority report, even though the temptation is overwhelming.
Any objection? So ordered. Senator Atkinson, how do you vote?
Aye and aye.
Madam Chair?
Senator Ringo?
Point of order?
Do I need one more motion?
No, Madam Chair. We need to open the work sessions on those bills.
Oh. So let's go back, Senator Ferrioli, on Senate Bill 640. Senator Winters will be appointed as the carrier. Open a work session on House Bill 2668 and House Bill 3121. Senator Atkinson has moved that we reconsider the rules by which
the vote by which
we passed, adopted House Bill 2668 and House Bill 3121. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. We are now in work session on House Bill 2668 and House Bill 3121.
Aye.
Senator Atkinson votes aye on both bills. Senator Ringo votes aye on both bills.
Correct.
Close the work session. Thank you. Any further discussion?
Thank you, Madam.
You're welcome. We're out of here. Be prepared for a busy day tomorrow, guys, as we try and wrap this puppy up.